I see a real physical change in people. It's like growing from the inside out, you know, that you can just see them get taller, you know, that it just opens them up. Yeah, and that just sense of believing, you know, in themselves. And yeah, the physical kind of, yeah!
That is Simply Focus with Elva Cherney and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joy and Deep.
Are you ready for this new episode? Then please welcome your hosts, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godin.
Hello and welcome to episode number 83. We are here on Zoom with Tara Gretton. Hi, Tara.
Hi. Hi, Dominic. Hi, Elfie.
It's so good to see you. And you're in Bath right now.
Yes, I am. Yes, in very rainy Bath. It's raining a lot.
So we have been there in summer when it was sunny Bath, and we have here and joy to spend time with you, to spend time with you at the UKA SFP conference, and to spend time with you before the UKA SFP conference. And we really fell in love with the work you do. So we're very grateful to have you here today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And Elfie and Bibi even joined your workshop on solution-focused DJing at the UK SFP conference. So we're very, very curious and we're happy to talk about that with you.
Tara, you're the founder of Solution Revolution, where one of your main topics is to give young people a voice. You're a member of the Solution-Focused Trainers LTD, together with John Wheeler, with Naomi Whitehead and Kit Burns. You are working with schools, you're working in so many different fields, and everywhere I see the value of solution focus. And you're also working with organizations, you're working as a solution focused facilitator and practitioner, also in private practice with your therapy and coaching practice. And yeah, we are curious what topics we will touch today in particular.
So before we come to that, what fascinates you with solution focus?
Well, when I was thinking about this question, it really kind of took me back to when I started my social work training. And I did my degree here in Bath and started to kind of learn about empowerment. And that really resonated with me. And I was like, this is why I'm doing this. It's about empowering people, giving people a voice. And in the course of my degree, I got introduced to the solution-focused approach by Rob Black. And just having that opportunity to hear from him about brief and about how the solution-focused approach worked, and combined with my real passion for empowerment, I was like, this is it. This is the thing, you know, this is the approach that enables you to empower people. And on my first social work placement, I always wanted to work with young people, but I worked with adults with learning difficulties in a user-led organization. And that was the best opportunity that I could have had in terms of really cementing what I believed in and what my sort of mission and passion was. And they really taught me that, you know, we know ourselves better than anyone else. And we don't need to be told what to do. You know, you're there as a professional to support us to achieve that. So I think that was my first real introduction and fascination with the solution-focused approach. And now, as I have the opportunity to work with children and young people, it's almost like the nuance of it. I think it's around what the assumptions give you, you know, and it's almost like that young people get a sense from you. It's almost like nonverbal, that they just know, you know, and that very first question. So, you know, if this was to be useful, what difference would it make? Or, you know, what are your best hopes? And they're kind of looking at you and, you know, it's so simple and yet so profound, you know, and has such a profound impact on them. And I love it, you know, that you ask that question and they take their coat off, you know, they put their feet up on the table, you know, you can see it in their body language, the difference it makes to them, because you're asking questions that they haven't been asked before. It's not about us, it's about them. And that's what I love about it.
This is so beautiful. So Tara, what are your best hopes from working with young people?
My best hopes is, you know, I think it's hard to be a young person. I think it's hard to be a child, you know. There's a lot going on, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And with good intention, you know, hopes for your child or hopes for within a school that, you know, about outcome and children and young people being at their best and doing well. But my hope is that they get an opportunity to say themselves what they want. You know, like I said, even if the intentions are good, rather than us doing to children or saying, this would be good for you, or, you know, this is what we want for you. It's like, what do you want? And, you know, and what I love about the solution-focused approach, it's about asking them what they want, but then the beauty of asking them how they cope and manage, you know, what they do well already. And for me, that is just so important and so wonderful to give them that opportunity to notice themselves and that sort of domino effect of change once you open up that conversation with them. So, yeah, my best hope for young people is to have a voice, to hear their own voice, to believe in themselves and to notice the small things, you know, to notice the small things that they do well already that's going to help them, you know, in their future lives.
So how do you work with them to give them a voice? And also, how does giving them a voice through solution-focused questions helps them to really also use their voice in their life?
You know, when I decided to leave social care, I worked in an amazing team called the 117 Project in Bath that I heard about and just wanted to work there. It was a solution-focused team and it was working with families and young people to reduce the number of children coming into the care system purely using solution focus. It's like, I want to work there. And, you know, noticing the difference that that made to families using the solution-focused approach, yeah, was an amazing experience. But it was very much at a high threshold. You know, people were coming into social care at really difficult times. You know, it's almost like, please take my child. You know, things are so difficult. And I felt really passionately that we need to be having these conversations earlier. We need to be getting in there sooner rather than waiting to that point. And I just gave up my job, much to my husband's like, okay, fine, I'm giving up. I'm setting up on my own. I'm going on a mission. And that's what I wanted to do, was to try and offer a solution-focused conversation to young people much earlier. A lot of the work that I'm doing is, why can't it just be an everyday conversation? You know, why can't it be within the culture of schools, that that's the language that they're promoting and using? So that's something that I'm doing a lot of sort of with my training in schools. And it's just evolved that way, that schools are more and more interested. You know, they're seeing the usefulness of it, the impact that it has. So in my group work, it's about, yeah, let's just introduce the language, you know, rather than, you know, it necessarily being in a one-to-one or therapeutic setting. Let's just introduce the language of SF to children and young people in our communities and in our schools.
And how do you do that?
So, I mean, specifically thinking about the DJ workshop. So, I mean, I have a real love of music. Music is really important to me, as is drama. We do drama workshops as well. But in the DJ workshops, it's really interesting how it's evolved. So I work alongside this amazing DJ, Adam Rackabeat, who's really a very cool guy and also works as a mentor with young people as well. So he's really passionate about the well-being of young people. So we kind of said, right, we need to get together and do these DJ workshops. And we were like, okay, let's just put it together. Solution focused, DJing, see what happens. And initially it was a bit of a sort of solution focused sandwich. There was a bit of sort of like SF questions at the beginning. What are your hopes? And then Adam would do his bit. And then we'd kind of do some scaling at the end. But what we noticed was that Adam was really picking up on the language of the solution focused approach. And so it just became sort of more that it was just running through it. It was sort of just in the body of it. And that it was, rather than it being sort of a format, that it was really about just introducing that type of language. So as they're experiencing the DJing or music production, and so noticing strengths and getting them to notice each other's, what they're doing well. So really, it's like so experiential. And so it's kind of laced through the workshop. And what we noticed recently in 2 days that we did in the school, they were doing a bit of the DJing because they were quite large groups. So some of them were having a go, you know, loving it. And then the rest of them were dancing. And I was like in the middle of it, dancing with the kids. And it was just really interesting that when we asked the questions afterwards, after them experiencing either doing the DJing or feeling what music did to them and what dancing did to them, and then getting them to notice what difference it made was just amazing. And, you know, how they were able to kind of relate that to their well-being as well, you know, so really experiencing music and then enabling them. It just seems to open them up to being more, thinking about possibility and hope about themselves and noticing more about themselves. So it's a lot of fun, but it is about just introducing this as a way of thinking and a language that you don't need to analyze the problem. You can focus on what you want, and you can do these things because there's so many things that you do well already. Now, we were asking questions to them at the end, you know, about what difference music makes to you, but we were like, what else do you do that helps you? Because it's well-being week, and so what helps you around your sort of well-being? And they're like, you know, I stroke my dog, I read a book, you know. And I wonder whether they have had the opportunity to notice these things before, you know, and the difference that it makes to them, that wow, you know, I can do things, I'm doing things already that are good for me and that help me cope. So yes, sorry, I've just gone rambling on.
It's amazing to listen to you, and I particularly love this combination of really creating an experience with dance, with music, with, well, being on the scratch board and composing music, and then bringing this experience back to their everyday life, basically. Mm. And I think this makes a huge difference. And you told me a few days ago that you love to work with strength cards as well, and that it's sometimes really hard for young people to see their strength. So yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah, so I've been using it in my private practice as well, but I've just started an amazing opportunity in a secondary school working with sixth formers, so young people that are about to take their A levels. And a lot of the young people that are coming to see me are sort of in their second year. I was like, wow, they've got so many big, you know, they've only done 1 year of their A levels, they're starting their second year, and they've got to be doing their application for university, or whether they're going to university, are they going to do something else? And there's just so many big decisions. They're really thinking about their futures, you know, in being adults, and also thinking about so many other things, you know, that's happening in the world. So much to manage as they kind of prepare to take that leap into adulthood. So, you know, their hopes are to manage their anxiety quite often. And in that, they seem to forget what they've managed before. They only see these kind of big decisions and the struggles that they're having with them in that moment. So giving them the opportunity to really notice themselves. So to describe what they want, their preferred future, but then to give them the opportunity to really notice what they have coped with and how they've done that previously. But yeah, sometimes I think they find that really, really difficult to do that. So I lay out all of the strength cards, and I just give them an opportunity to spend some time to, you know, get up and just walk around the room, you know, have a look at the strength cards, and to think about themselves, you know, a time when they've coped, you know, when they've managed a big decision in their lives, and to select, you know, some strength cards, however many cards they like, to describe, you know, themselves in relation to how they coped and managed. It's a really beautiful exercise, and I feel really privileged to be able to give them the opportunity to do that. You know, and there's some awkwardness around it. We don't often ask people, you know, what your strengths are. So just giving them time and space to be able to do that. This is a safe space for you to be able to really notice yourself. And so then they select the cards, and then I ask them to describe to me, you know, why they chose that. Or we might do, you know, what would school pick for you? You know, if I was to ask them, what would they say? Or your mum, you know, or your friends. Mm. So to really think about what others would notice as well. And as they kind of relax into the exercise, you know, and they've got the cards and they're kind of going through them and, you know, really staring at them and thinking about it, it's just a really beautiful thing to see them, to notice themselves, or to enable them to think about how other people see them and notice what they do well and these strengths. So, yeah, I find that the strength cards are a really useful tool in enabling that.
What kind of strengths are there on these strength cards you use?
Curious, determined, sincere, generous, fair, caring, flexible, wise. And it's really interesting how, you know, given the opportunity, the things that they notice about themselves, that, you know, describing themselves as wise and all what other people would notice about them, energetic, hopeful. And actually I've noticed that recently, how many of them pick hopeful. I think I've said appreciative, modest, adventurous. Yeah, and I let them just pick as many as they want, you know.
No restrictions.
Yeah. You know, I'm so fascinated by the way that the solution focused approach is on the surface. You know, the conversation, it's in that moment and it's so profound, or it can be, you know, the experience of that by staying on the surface, you know, what difference it can make to people. Yeah.
Yeah. You also mentioned that it's easier for them to pick cards than to come up with own strength in the beginning, and that it helps them to find their own words and their own strength and own answers.
Yeah. Because I think they're kind of awkward about it. You know, it's a hard thing to do. So I just think it kind of enables them, opens them up to that. And what I notice is once they do it, you know, they'll pick loads. They'll have perhaps 20 cards and you're like, yes, you know. And then what I notice in the sort of sessions after that is that you don't necessarily need to use the cards again. Yeah, you might come back to them, but it's just opened up that possibility of seeing themselves with strength. Yeah.
And what I really love is that just what you said, you have them describe then, oh, how do you behave when you are wise? What are you doing then? And so it's really bringing words into actions and then making things visible and seeing how others might see them. And well, by that, just giving meaning to the words in different ways and creating wiseness. Is this an English word?
It is now.
Co-creating wise people, hopeful people.
Yeah, I'm quite a visual sort of person. And I find when you ask people what they want and they get an opportunity to describe that, and then you invite them to notice what they do well already, so with the strengths. And I see a real physical change in people. It's like growing from the inside out, you know, that you can just see them get taller, you know, that it just opens them up. Yeah, and that just sense of believing, you know, in themselves. And yeah, the physical kind of, yeah, you know.
So you say you notice this physical change, and then it's also, as you mentioned earlier, about giving a voice to young people. So what difference in terms of giving a voice to young people do you notice after an exercise with the strength cards, or do you notice after a workshop with a DJ?
Well, what's been really interesting about the workshop with the DJ is that our recent thing, we did 8 workshops over the course of 2 days. So different classes and different ages. And everyone was so different. You know, everything, the things that they said, you know, was so different. But each of them was so insightful, such wisdom, wiseness. You know, I think you can learn so much from young people and children. You know, even that there was little ones as small as 6, and they just, the stuff that they were saying was just so insightful, so wise. And I think giving young people a voice, giving them that opportunity to be comfortable to say, to invite them to contribute, to co-create, to collaborate. And they've got some really useful things to share. And I find that I learn from pretty much every child and young person that I work with. You know, they're just full of wisdom. And I think the process enables them not only for us to see that and share that and experience that, but for them to notice about themselves.
It also shows the big difference when someone is listening to them and really appreciating and taking them as experts for their lives and their voice and their words.
Yeah, and when I'm sort of delivering my training, thinking about the pace of a solution-focused conversation and the space that you give within a solution-focused conversation. And I think working sort of in a school environment or working with children and young people, we kind of want to fill the gaps, you know, we want to kind of advise. So actually within the solution-focused approach, giving that space and taking your time over the conversation, really, really listening, and the difference that that makes to them when they feel heard. You know, it makes such a difference. And then giving them the space to think. You know, I don't think often enough that there is time. We don't give young people enough space to be able to really think. So I think that's so empowering to them. And again, you know, that kind of physical change that you see, you know, I've got something really valuable to say.
Well, and for me, your motto of giving young people a voice, well, I can see that in everything you do. And I'm still deeply touched when I think back to the UK SFP conference and the workshop you did there, because there you didn't speak for the young people, but you brought them into the workshop room. You invited a few people from a class, from a school who works mainly with deaf people. Mm-hmm. And then also another group of young people who did a trauma workshop together with you and your colleagues. And it was so, so beautiful to see those young people and to, well, have the chance to converse with them, to have the chance to ask them how they experience the work you do, and to see them standing in front of a whole group of strangers working with the solution-focused approach, asking them questions, looking at them, and I think, looking for their brilliance, and yet being there and standing there and talk to us and share their stories. This was amazing. And I'm really very grateful that you did that, because I remember in another setting you mentioned we should really bring our clients into the workshop rooms. And it's just wonderful to see how you did that as a role model. And it's very inspiring. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, again, something that I really love about the solution-focused approach, it's not about the professional, you know, it's not about us. It's so about them. So, you know, I believe in sort of a workshop setting as well. You know, it's important to hear from them. And for us to be in the wings, you know, to be at the back is so important. And actually what I noticed in that workshop, they loved it and they thrived, you know, and they were saying things that I hadn't heard them say before, you know, so even in that experience for them made a huge difference to them. Yeah, you know, it's about them and it's about their voice. Yeah, and they loved it. They loved it. Yeah.
And so did we.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what feedback do you get after the workshop, or what do you see them doing differently when they go out and kind of go into their, well, real life again?
Yeah, it's really interesting with the DJ workshop, and it's interesting talking to the children afterwards, but also interesting about what the teachers notice. And when we're sort of having the conversations with them, because at the beginning as well, we'll be like, because it's well-being week, and we're like, you know, what does well-being mean to you? You know, what do you know about it? And the teachers are like, we haven't asked them that before, you know, and they're like, whoa, they're saying such amazing things. So, you know, that's something that the teachers notice about how insightful they are, you know, how much they know. And what we noticed from the DJ workshop is that it's just a sense of freedom. It's loads of hugging at the end, you know, it's just, there's such a great energy. And then we kind of give them an opportunity to think about, you know, if this was, you know, what difference is this experience going to make to you? And they're like, you know, I'm going to go home and listen to more music, or, you know, I'm going to spend more time with my dog because it makes me feel well. You know, they're kind of coming up with things that they're going to do differently because of what they've experienced in the workshop. So it's a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of laughing. It's a lot of fun. And just that sense of openness and possibility and them being in charge of themselves, which is wonderful to see.
And these experiences are so worthwhile for them. especially nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something again that I feel really, really passionately about. You know, we've got a real issue in the UK of that young people rise in sort of mental health concerns for young people and young people trying to access services. So CAMHS, which is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. And it's really difficult. The thresholds are high or there's huge waiting lists for young people to access mental health services. And also what I noticed is that young people are sort of self-diagnosing, that they're giving themselves sort of labels of anxiety or depression, and almost that they feel that they have to do that in order to be heard. So what I feel really passionately, I feel passionately about a lot of things relating to SF, but is if we are offering a solution-focused conversation early or whenever to young people and really working with them to describe what they want, but again, to notice how they cope and how they manage, you know, every day with the things that they're struggling with, then I feel really strongly that this will make a huge difference to this epidemic of mental health issues that we've got. So I want to be able to spread the word of solution-focused approach within schools, wherever I can, as much as possible to offer that to young people.
And you also do that in your community besides schools.
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of a lot with the group work that we do, the drama workshops, going into community centres. And what we're trying to do at the moment, actually, with the DJ is to do more of that in the community. So yeah, that getting the solution-focused approach out there in any way possible to introduce the language and, yeah, and also my private practice.
That sounds very exciting. Well, you're not only passionate about bringing solution-focused conversations to young people, you're also passionate about training people in becoming solution-focused practitioners. So what is it that fascinates you about that, and what do you love about this part of your work?
Yeah, I mean, I was on a real sort of mission to be a solution-focused practitioner in every school in the local area. And what I noticed was that schools, you know, might not just want me there, and a lot to do with funding, that it might be simpler to or easier to train somebody and to bring the solution-focused approach into schools that way. So yeah, I got to do the solution-focused trainers course myself, and then I was like, I want to deliver the course in Bath. So having the opportunity to train teachers or support staff in school, it's just making a real difference locally. So yeah, having the opportunity to train people in schools and them coming to do the solution focused trainers course is really interesting, because they're going back, they are using the approach with the students, they're sharing their experience of doing the course. You know, there's a real buzz. You know, it's kind of like there's a buzz on the street. You know, the solution focused approach is really good, it's really useful, it's making a difference. And then what comes from that is quite often then that they'll ask me to go in and train staff. What's really brilliant is not only seeing the solution-focused approach again in that one-to-one therapeutic setting, but that actually we can use this in any conversation. And I kind of describe it as corridor conversations, you know, between the teacher and the child, that you can draw on a tool, use the solution-focused approach, you know, embed the assumptions of SF, and that make a difference to the conversations that you're having with a child at any point in the school day. So that's really exciting and making a real difference. And the great thing is the schools are noticing it. You know, they're very outcome focused and they're seeing the difference and they love that. So they want more of it.
Yay.
So of course now we are curious, how do you do that in your course that they go out and are so enthusiastic about that?
I mean, I think, you know, it's a real privilege to deliver John Wheeler and Greg Vinnicum's Solution Focused Trainers course. It's beautifully put together and, you know, it shares the history of the solution-focused approach, which I think is really important and relevant. It helps to build that picture and why you fall in love with it. But one of the, it really focuses on the assumptions. And I think that's really important. And what I've learned from the course and delivering the course is how important the assumptions are. And that if you sort of almost embody them, you know, if they're running through your veins, then the questions and the conversation will come. And, you know, when you talk to people in schools and you're sort of inviting them not to define children, young people by their problem. You know, you've got a class of 30, you've got a difficult young person, it's hard not to see them, you know, as so when you're inviting them not to define that child by that and to look for the times when that isn't happening and to see them with possibility and to have hope for them and that they see that as possible, you know, teachers want that, you know, and they love it. So I think, yeah, for me in training, the assumptions are so important. And that's really, you know, so important in the Solution Focused Trainers course. So I've learned a lot from that. And so if I go into school and I've got an hour, you know, it's like, come in and spend an hour. You're like, okay, I've got an hour to sort of share the solution focused approach. And I think the assumptions are such a key part of that, as well as the tools.
So what assumptions are you sharing if you have 1 hour?
I think key is seeing children, young people as experts of themselves and that we don't need to talk about the problem. You know, we don't need to analyze the problem and we don't need to ask why, you know. So I think those are the key things and really inviting them to see that change is possible for these kids and that the problem isn't happening all the time. I think the solution-focused assumptions are so much about humanizing our interactions. You know, it's so respectful and it takes me back to when I'd started my social work degree and I fell in love with empowerment and opportunity and believing in people. So those are the key things that I want to share in schools. And I think it's great for teachers because it allows them to be human. Allows them, you know, to feel themselves and to still manage that classroom. You know, when I work with children and that have sort of difficulties in the classroom, when they talk about the times when it's better and they're describing the teacher, you know, they're saying the teacher is really strict, really boundaried, but he or she respects me, you know, so they want the boundary. You know, they don't mind the strict teacher, but there's respect. And so that, you know, humanizing that interaction. Pretty much every young person that I've worked with that's having difficulties with behavior in the classroom will say that.
And I think this is so true. I right now picture teachers I had and I really admired. And those were strict teachers, teachers who set boundaries and teachers who were really respectful and knew what they talked about. Yeah. Or at least I felt that they know what they talk about.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that your first career was drama school. And I'm really curious how drama school and solution focus inspire each other in your world.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. You know, drama when I was younger was, it was everything to me when I was at school. And it was the thing that I was good at. You know, and I wasn't particularly academic. So drama was, yeah, was my thing. And I was, you know, loved being sort of a bit of a character actress. And I don't know, there's something about being somebody else and, you know, the possibility and the adventure in that. And I think that for me at school, not being particularly academic, you know, having that as an outlet, it really, really helped me. And it was a lot of fun. And I think there is a connection between being able to do that and the solution-focused approach. You know, it's kind of about an outlet, about possibility, about dreaming, you know, and, you know, when we've run the drama workshops with the children, you know, just getting that opportunity to improvise, to act out, you know, what things look like, you know, what might be happening in their miracle day or, and I just think it's a really wonderful kind of vehicle to express yourself or to lose yourself as well. And I know for me as a child and a young person, it was really, really beneficial to me growing up.
So it's losing yourself into your preferred future and
yes,
what works. That sounds wonderful.
And Elf is also trained as an actress, so she knows
that. She knows that.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the things that I truly learned in my acting school or drama school is, you just said it beautifully, it's like there's this kind of attraction of being someone else and yet staying in your authentic self, because otherwise you can never play a role authentically. authentically. So it's always somehow connected with you because you're like the medium for it. So I think this is also when it comes to solution focused. We call it solution focused, so we call it acting, but at the end, it's the work you do is authentically Tara, and the work I do is hopefully authentically Elfie, and the work Dominic does is hopefully authentically Dominic, and yet we're doing solution focus, and it's this beauty of being connected to oneself and then being connected to others and to co-create something meaningful together.
Yeah.
And meaningful in acting may mean a great scene that others will love, where others will laugh, where others will cry, where others will be whatever that inspires them in whatever way or touches them. And this is, I think, very connected to the work we do in Solution Focus and how acting inspired me and my work for Solution Focus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One similarity I see is also the reaction that happens to me when people ask me about my preferred future or about what has worked in the past, kind of describing them or also acting out a person that I could be, that I was already, and I can be again. You said they act out their preferred future. And I think it's also the same when we talk about it. You have those feelings about your preferred future and you see yourself doing things there as someone else in the future, as you in the future as doing something else.
Naomi Whitehead, you know, my wonderful colleague, we were having a conversation recently and we were talking about, well, lots of different things. And she was sort of describing the miracle question and or describing the preferred future as daring to dream. And I loved that, you know, you know, that possibility and visualizing, acting out that preferred future, daring to dream. Yeah, I love that.
Oh, me too. So Tara, looking back on your solution-focused journey, if there is one learning, one thing you might not have mentioned yet that was truly, truly important to you and made a difference in your work and the way you work, what is that?
I might have touched on it in some ways, but I think it's a balance of power. I mean, I have sort of spoken about it, but it is so important to me. It's hard not to mention it again. It's not about you. You know, we have a job to do. You know, we have the questions to ask. But I think it is such a privilege to be invited into someone's life and to invite them to notice themselves, invite a child to see themselves in all their glory, you know, all the things that they cope with, that they do well, and to describe what they want to be different. It's just, such a privilege to be able to do that. Yeah, I think I've probably said that before, but it's hard not to say it again.
And I think it's very, very important to say it all over again and again.
And, again. And there's one more opportunity to say it again with the challenge of the week.
Yes. So I was working with a young person recently, and he's an A-level student. He had a lot going on, a lot to think about, a lot of decisions to make, and his sort of best hopes were to be able to manage his feelings better, to be sort of less worried about things and to be at ease with himself. And when he described his preferred future, he talked about taking up swimming again, you know, and this was something that he had done before, and that he remembered that it made a real difference to him, that it calmed him down. So, you know, in order to achieve his best hopes, he felt that maybe trying swimming would be useful. So I saw him again and, you know, asking him what had been better and since we'd last seen each other. And he said, oh, I went swimming. And he said he'd talked to a friend before. He was a competitive swimmer and he'd given him this program, you know, what he was to do in the pool. And so he got in the pool and, you know, started to do this, lots of swimming, like lengths underwater. And it was too much and he couldn't breathe. So he had to come out of the water and he was quite frightened and anxious. So he just kind of took himself to the side of the pool and just started to consciously breathe, just to notice his breath. And he sort of calmed himself down with the use of his breath. He then said to me, so then I just swam gently up and down the pool, you know, not trying to swim underwater, not fast. And he said, you know, there was peace. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I said to him, you know, what difference has this made to you? And he said, well, you know, since then, when there's been times when I've been at home and my brother's been arguing with my mom and I want to get involved, and he said, I just take a step back and I breathe. And I think about gliding up and down the swimming pool. I think about that, think about my breathing, and I calm myself down. So I was just really, really struck by this conversation. So I just want to invite people to think about something in their lives that has worked, that has helped them, you know, whether it's when they're stuck or whether they're worried, you know, in the moment about something, what they do that works, you know, like with this young person thinking about the swimming. And I would just invite them to think about their breath and, you know, if they can, close their eyes, consciously breathe and just think about that thing, whatever it is, that helps them in that moment.
Thank you, Tara, for this lovely story connected to the challenge of the week. And we are now curious how the challenge of the week works for you and what inspires you and inspired and keeps inspiring you out of this conversation with Tara. So please let us know and comment in the comment field of this podcast on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 83. And please remember, what inspires you might also inspire someone else to keep going their solution-focused journey, to keep spreading the word wherever they go, as Tara does in her community, as Tara does with schools, with young people. So please join the conversation and let us know.
And one thing that works well for us is reading your comments and your reviews that you write on our podcast, in the comments section of our podcast or on iTunes and other platforms. And whenever we get one, we not only reply, but we also having a very good week. So please leave a comment in the comment section of our podcasts, write a review on iTunes, and help other people so they find the Simply Focused podcast too.
And as usual, you will find all the resources we mentioned in the podcast again in the resource section of this episode.
So thank you very, very much for listening. Thank you very much for this lovely conversation, Tara, and have a wonderful, great week. Goodbye.
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 Wow, what a great episode again. Do you also like the Simply Focused podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focused podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This was Simply Focused podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godet, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.